Checking in with a state representative, Techie Chan, for another Techie Talk. How you doing, Techie?
Hey, doing all right today, Joe. Today we're a little bit off because we missed last Friday, but I hope you had a wonderful weekend.
Yes, so it was, it was half and half. Actually poured on Saturday and was beautiful on Sunday, but I guess we need the rain, they say, so I guess that's good.
Yeah, it was still a bit of a drought season. Obviously, we got our water from the Quabbin, so my hope this winter is a blizzard in the Berkshires and we stay relatively unharmed on the coast.
That sounds good to me. Actually, last time I checked, I did check, believe it or not, Quabbin was at 93% capacity, even in the midst of the drought, so we're doing okay.
No, it's what happens when you flood six communities or five communities.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Exactly. It's a big space.
It's a lot of water out there for sure, yeah. What's going on in your world these days?
It's been a little bit crazy. I mean, we had the Democratic City Committee breakfast virtually yesterday. There was over 100 attendees, and congratulations to Anne Mahoney for being this year's 2020 Dennis Ryan Community Service Award for Democrat of the Year. I was the 2018 recipient, so it's great to see a good friend and colleague to receive that recognition. As you know, we're hitting the end of the home stretch for the big campaign. So the Kamala Harris folks reached out to me on raising a few extra last minute dollars. So there's actually an Asian American event virtually this Saturday that I'm trying to help raise a couple of dollars for as we're closing the stretch. And they're looking for a representation of the different Asian American legislators around the country. So I'll be representing for lack of a better term. This coming weekend. So I've been scrambling to do things like that. We are preparing an oversight hearing for the continuation of a DPL division professional licensure oversight we had last time this October. We received a lot of new data sets, and we'll be doing a follow-up. You can follow that on my Facebook Live, as well as committee members' Facebook Live last Thursday in October, which I think is the 29th. It's Halloween's a Saturday, right?
It is, yep, 29th.
So we're going to do like a 1 o'clock hearing for several hours and follow up from last year's oversight hearing. It is not public testimony. It is a direct questioning of the administration. Obviously, the public is welcome to watch, and the recording will be available on the Massachusetts Legislative website, which is malegislature.gov. Malegislature.gov. So you can watch it as well. What else is going on? It just seems like we ranging guest speakers to talk to the committee members about the impact on the trade industry, which is one of the licensed professions we oversee. Are continuing to monitor the situation of hotels, restaurants, hospitality industry folks around the country locally and consumer confidence as well. Unemployment rate has gone below 11% for the month of September, which I don't remember the exact number, but we've come down from double digits, which is a good sign moving into the winter. This week I'm going to have a call with the Mass Biotech Council. The legislature has a call set up to find out where we are on things like vaccines, where we are on preparing for wave two, what's the impact on the industry, healthcare industry financially as well during this entire pandemic period. So, yeah, I still got some going on, mostly sitting here, as you all see me, with my tablet in front of me. And
you have a comfortable chair there, Techie.
I took my relaxed back support home with me. Actually need to get a new computer chair for my bedroom, which is where my desktop is. So, yes, Mom. Okay, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Mom.
I am home. But I do actually need things like a computer desk chair. I mean, that's worn out. And I think everyone is discovering their electrical usage is going up again.
Yes.
As we head to the winter months, I remind everybody to be mindful of the additional home costs of working from home. Constantly plugging your devices in. You have your printers, you have computers, laptops, cell phones. You have the lights on in the house. Obviously, I have the lights on because I can't get good video here, but I really should consider going outside if it's a good day. Do a video call with you there. To save some electricity.
Yeah, and there's less daylight now too. The days are getting shorter. So,
yeah, we're missing the 8 p.m. sundowns.
Yes.
So daylight savings is coming, I think, the first week of November this year. It's extremely late.
First this year, exactly, yeah.
So, So it's very late. So we're getting, please be aware of your water consumption. Everything continues to be pretty high.
Yeah, and the mayor told me that trash in the city has gone up a whole lot because people are shopping from home now and just discarding the packaging material. So starting to add up with costs to take trash away.
Absolutely. And those who knows me, I'm cheap enough that I don't like food waste. So at home, I try to obviously maximize every item of food in the house. And this is another good thing to remind folks is that if you have a couple of dollars to spare and you see food that's still not expired, particularly non-perishables, and you feel that you're not going to use them, be aware to please donate to a local food pantry.
Yep.
That's another thing. If you got a good time to check your drawers, you see a non-perishable that's not expired, definitely drop out of your food pantry. You're going to need the help as we head into the winter months.
Oh, yeah. Salvation Army, I know, Interfaith Social Services needs help, Southwest Community Food Pantry. So this place is right in the city to give.
Mm-hmm. And if you're on the edges, and check with the YMCA because they run the Germantown Food Pantry.
Right. Yep.
If you're in the peninsula, check with the Y, and I'm sure they can arrange a way to social distance, or you can just drop off and run if you're concerned to do that. So, just a little reminder, wave two seems to be on the way. We're well into triple digits, and the death count seems to be staying close to the double digits, and hospital room and ICU beds are being filled now. So second wave is on the way. So the only thing we can do is try to mitigate the peak. Hope the peak is small. And the only way we can do that is we continue to social distance, wear masks, keep our hands clean, use sanitizer, all the good hygiene stuff we've been doing all year.
Yeah, it's back to the flatten the curve again, that there was such a push during the first outbreaks. So I guess we know a little bit more about what to do that now than we did then, at least.
No, absolutely. And we'll be talking to Mass Biotech, and we'll have another call with these ciders coming up in the next few weeks. Our understanding so far is that we have stockpiled thousands of ventilators. We've stockpiled millions of pieces of PPE at this point. Plus, we have the N95 treatment center in Somerville that can sanitize them for maybe 6 to 12 times, on an N95 mask, depending on the condition of the mask. And people are now home knowing that you should not keep medical grade equipment at your house. Yeah, medical grade PPE, we need them in hospitals and our first responders and our police and our fire and the EMS folks. If you're at home use, regular mask, a scarf, you can wear, now winter time, you don't have to wear your latex or rubber gloves to the market. You can wear ordinary gloves that you can wash they'll be just fine. So, the state feels that we should be in a good position, but then again, you never know till it happens. Lord forbid, we have a New York situation. There's only so much we can get ready for.
What's going on in New York that we should be aware of?
Well, New York is moving into 5% daily rate.
Oh.
We haven't gone there yet. And I've had friends who came back from New York. People in Greenwich Village is acting like nothing's wrong. They're heavily crowded together. You've seen the news, this portion of the Jewish population has been protesting because it impacts their Sabbath.
Yeah.
In a way that's affecting their practice and religion, but also social distancing issues. And they're issuing, they're issuing fines now for non-compliance of social distancing and the guidelines of reopening, as well as fining people in New York City for not wearing masks. They're doing it. And they're not joking around. A second wave in a super dense population like New York after barely surviving the first one, it feels like it was just such a horror show.
Yes.
It would be absolutely devastating. Italy has actually had some stability. They're looking at a baseline second wave. The country has now initiated a statewide fine. It's about over $1,000 US for non-compliance.
Wow.
People are not screwing around in other countries. Thankfully, in Massachusetts, we're relying on individuals to choose on their own. There's been almost little to no fines I'm aware of for $300 for not complying with the governor's executive order, but
yeah,
it's up to us. And you're going to sit there and flaunt it and tell us that this isn't real. Well, the rest of the planet's taking this very seriously to the point that they're willing to put civil penalties against their local people for non-compliance because the negative impact on not just health, which is number one, safety of our population, but two, the economy.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I read something today, actually, that the Chinese economy is rebounding higher than it was, pre-pandemic. So they seem to have, I guess, gone through the second wave.
Yeah, they're over the 5% zone in GDP in the third quarter after taking, obviously, a dip in the second quarter. First quarter, everybody was stable because pandemic really hit in March. Right. But the second quarter, I mean, they took a massive dip of -6+. That's not surprising. Everybody was taking a massive dip, and they recovered very quickly. They have truly tested millions and tens of millions of people.
That is just astounding that they can do that so quickly. It really is.
Well, they can manufacture a lot of stuff because a lot of stuff that they manufacture there is what we get from. So yeah. U.S. companies manufacture that stuff overseas, so the manufacturing plants is there, which is, again, the argument for biotech and others to diversify their manufacturing facilities globally, not just in the U.S., but in Europe, in South America, yeah. Northern Africa, and also in Asia, not just China, but you go into places like Japan, Taiwan, Indonesia, other places that have any kind of decent infrastructure. It's expensive, by the way. I mean, this is going to be a major cost. The reason they're in China, centralized manufacturing, because it's affordable, keeps the cost affordable, and that cost is passed to us. So expect, some level of rise as they start to ramp up manufacturing in multiple continents at once. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they make all the stuff there. So imagine trying to do 10, 9 million people in testing in rapid fashion.
No, they can't.
Yeah, and they have cell phone tracking. So,
there's only, 6 million people in Massachusetts, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, we barely tested, a couple hundred thousand?
Yeah.
So in China, their phone system app, that everyone's now required to download an app to indicate whether COVID positive negative, when the last test was. You have to provide their state ID at every venue so they can contact trace you, so you have they have an issued state ID card. It isn't like here where you have Massachusetts, they have a national ID card that you have to scan so they can track everywhere you've been. Like I said, police state, you can do things like that.
Right. Yeah.
They can track your social media, they can track your messaging system, they can track all that to find what's going on. And of course, you have no civil rights, so they just want to haul you off to a hospital, prison.
Away you go, yeah.
There you go. You don't really have a choice. But, one of the interesting things, China's economy is big because of the nature of the internal population. It's like 1.4 billion people. Mm-hmm. The middle class is approximately, approaching 600 million plus. Then you have
the wealth population of this country.
Yeah, it's massive. The middle class is big. But they also have a wealth disparity. So we talk about that a lot here. Their wealth disparity gap is much larger than ours, because only a very tiny part of the Communist Party has all the money. Mm-hmm. We're talking, not even 10,000 people out of 1.5 billion, 1.4 billion. So the wealth disparity is very different from here, but they also is a regulated controlled economy. So they control everything. So the start and stop. And all the major industries are all state owned. So utilities, water, even the infrastructure system for telecom is privately owned, but they're all government contracts, and the government is a shareholder. So,
can dictate where their economy goes when they want, basically.
Basically, and they also control the stock market. So, the stock market in Shanghai, the government, the ones that close it here, the New York Stock Exchange is privately owned. Actually, all the stock exchanges in the country or in the world is privately owned by China. So if the Dow tanks, the stock exchange has to make a decision as people in the business whether they shut it down.
Right.
In China, the government just calls, make a quick call, and the whole thing closes.
Gotcha.
There's some, advantages to being this type of country. So, right now they're preparing to do bubble trips to Singapore and Thailand. So what they do is that you have people who are COVID tested negative, they put them in a bubble at the airport, then they put them a bubble in a plane, then they got out from Thailand or Singapore knowing they've been in the bubble. Then the same thing happens when they return. They bubble people back up at the airport, test them, confirm, put them on the plane, bubble them back in China. And they only can do this, they're starting like 150 at a time to see how it goes.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what they've done in professional sports here in this country, for NBA anyway.
Yeah, but imagine doing that in tourism.
No, I can't.
Get bubbled in the airport, you're bubbled on the plane, you're bubbled off the plane, then you go enjoy where you've been, but you have to contact trace where you are, and then you're bubbled on the way home. So this is basically a way to avoid a 14-day quarantine.
Yeah.
By doing the bubble. And it, particularly in Asia, China is the biggest tourism source of the region. And Massachusetts' biggest tourism was from China. Number two is England.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, China then England is here prior to pandemic. So obviously there's no nonstop flights, which impacts our economy. Mm-hmm. The Chinese economy internally is so big, they're trying to mobilize internal tourism. And the city of Wuhan, which this all started in, is reopened tourism. And I was watching an article about that. And they're still only 30% below benchmark from last year in tourism. So they're offering massive discounts. People are trying to get in there. People feel like it's a civic duty to support their local economy, very much like how we do it as well. Mm-hmm. Government will try to provide, coupons and promotions and things like that with the local businesses. But, I mean, there's still that consumer confidence issue.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's no different from there and here. But, I mean, that's a big part of it. The real question of China is that, they're still making stuff to export. But if the rest of the world's economies are still negative GDP, who's going to buy? Question one. And then the other issue is they're also tourism related. So Shanghai, Beijing, Chengdu, Zhongshan is heavily reliant on foreign tourists as well. So people want to go see the Great Wall. People want to go see the Forbidden Palace. People want to visit the Shanghai, the financial center of Asia. They want to visit the birthplace of Sun Yat-sen. Not just tourism in the region from Japan and Taiwan and Hong Kong, but also from the U.S. Mm-hmm. As we head, as we all know, holidays are important to all of us.
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving's coming up. We're trying to, obviously encourage people to social distance somehow. Same thing with Christmas, but Chinese New Year will be in February. That's not far away when you think about it.
True.
And a lot of people from all over the world, Chinese people travel back to China. And that's a big economic impact for them. So,
for sure, yeah. I read where international air travel's down something like, 90% or more.
Mm-hmm. That was exactly it. I mean, it's 16 million people out of work in the airline industry alone globally, at this point. People, I ask, we want to bail out airlines. Every country is trying to figure out how to bail out an airline right now because of the massive amount of jobs plus the secondary job, the impact. So food services, laundry services, uniform providers, so you got all those, independent tailors. Mm. You have all the cleaning crews. You have the baggage guys, and you have the government employees.
Yep.
I mean, you got the passport employees who take on and off your luggage, right? So
yeah, this is transportation industries, everything. Yeah,
yeah, car rentals, yep. Tour groups, livery services. Mm-hmm. I mean, this massive ripple effect impact. So that's why they're trying to keep it from going bankrupt, because if they do, you have that whole negative impact. It's like hotels. I talked about last time the ripple effect of a hotel going down. So, that's why the governments around the world try to keep these businesses going. It's going to get harder and harder, but you got to figure out how to do it at the national level. One of the lessons from China, I think, is for the world is that, if you got a big enough local economy, because our per capita is the highest per capita in the world, you can sustain yourself, moving yourself above zero GDP, but it's very dependent on the population and the government to be very, very cautious, aware, and committed to keep COVID-19 under control.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the highest, you may have seen in the news, the highest COVID per capita is happening in the rural areas in the Midwest.
Yes, yeah.
They don't have a Mass General Hospital out there.
No, and, they don't have like a community center in every corner, or, a YMCA in every corner, or they can't diversify their population. Everybody has to kind of congregate in one central location. So that alone, can lead to more spread.
We only have one grocery market. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And that's challenging because, your hospital is 130 miles away, 150 miles away. I know we talk about the Berkshires and the impact of trying to get to hospitalization in Berkshires because of the winding roads and everything else, but in true rural America, this should be a major concern.
Sure. We talked a bit about the governor's budget presentation last week. Tacky, what do you think?
We had a meeting of Ways and Means last week as well, among the many meetings I'm doing. And the Ways and Means Committee in the House is working on analyzing the governor's numbers. We're still trying to figure out, what the impact is and what's real, what's not, I think is the way to put it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit, too, about the eviction moratorium, but we'll talk about the budget first, because it's actually higher than it was back in January.
Yeah, they're using their version of conservative estimates of between $3.5 and $3.7 billion loss for FY21. Like I said, the most seems to be the worst case scenario is around $5 billion, depending on who you ask. They take about $1.2 out of $3.5 billion worth of rainy day money, so $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion out of rainy day, and balance next year's budget, well, this year's budget now, because we're in this fiscal cycle.
Right. Yeah.
They're doing cost savings around government, which I have no idea what cost savings is anymore. I mean, we are using less like office supplies because I'm buying office supplies myself now. I'm not using the offices, and you know they're not using as much electricity, and same thing as other businesses. So there's probably some cost savings there. You know, they're moving some mass health money around, and they're using some COVID money to pay for public safety. So we still have some COVID money left. They're going to use it directly to public safety that's COVID related that we're paying out of state tax dollars now. So there's a lot of moving money around, for lack of a better term. And the governor's committed to not do layoffs.
Yep.
And he's, you know, we're not looking at another early retirement, because I'm getting a lot of calls from public employees. No, there is no early retirement incentive. I don't know how many times I have to tell people this.
Interesting.
Recurring compensation not having public employees. No, it is not on the table.
Was it before?
No, the last early retirement incentive was back 4 years ago. Yeah. The governor made a promise, it was 6 years ago now. Time is flying. Six years ago, the governor made a campaign promise that he was going to shrink the state government. As opposed to layoffs, he did an early retirement incentive with the approval of the legislature that shrank state government a little bit. So we already, by attrition, not replaced employees, so we save payroll. So when you retire, we just move up, but we don't fill in certain spots to save
money. Okay. And I know he's committed to not raising taxes either.
Yeah, raising taxes is hard at this time for everybody, because we're all in such hard shape. And it would have to be a broad income tax to do it, because we're not allowed to do tiered income tax in Massachusetts by Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the Massachusetts is going to get a chance to vote on this in 2022, I think, on the so-called millionaire's tax.
Oh, right.
Tax system for everybody over $1 million is taxed differently from the rest of us. So that's still floating out there. But that's still ways off.
Yeah.
But people need to understand there's also a negative impact. Sales tax is down, users tax, which is the use tax. Meals taxes is down. Hotel tax doesn't exist for the municipalities anymore, hotel motel tax.
Yeah.
Gas tax, that's dedicated to your roads. The reality is that's not happening. Now it's total ways and means. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're not driving. I mean, I fill my tank up maybe twice this summer, truly right. Full. I mean, when it's like a quarter tank, I feel just to fill it just because I'm out there. And I got to use it like, you know, word rewards program I'm doing for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like a completely filled tank. I don't think I've done it twice.
Right.
So, you know, that's also, you know, people are realizing that as well. And the T isn't taking any riders. Nobody's on the T. I mean, people are afraid.
To me is like the glaring white elephant in the room that we're going to have to deal with eventually is the MBTA.
Yeah. Income tax dollars are going to have to backfill the MBTA.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to address it. I mean, people aren't riding the T. There's no money. It isn't complicated. You know, it's like tolls. If nobody's on the pike, you get no toll money. If nobody's going to the airport, there's no fee money there. I mean, this isn't hard government math.
Right.
And I understand people are having a tough time and you can't raise taxes, but you know, your roads are going to get more potholes because nobody's paying taxes on things they use. So this is just people better be prepared for some, for lack of term, infrastructure issues going into next summer because of shortfalls in tax revenue.
Yeah, I know local aid is going to be level funded at least, so that I think will help some or whatnot.
Yeah, we committed back in August that we're going to level fund local aid for city and towns to create some predictability.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did that with Chapter 70. We're not doing the enhanced education reform funding. I think everybody has figured that out on their own.
Right.
I hope they figured that out on their own. But we're providing a 2% increase. We're trying to maintain the old system formula the best we can. The lottery is projecting $940 million next cycle. You know, it was closing in $1 billion in profit, so we're short around 50 million-ish, give or take. So we're looking more like 5 years numbers than it is now regarding lottery growth, largely driven by Keno as a problem because the bars aren't open. as well as multi-state lottery isn't as good because that's dependent on multiple states contributing to the jackpot. And because of the various closures and the different states doing different openings of businesses, there's inconsistency, which makes multi-state a lot harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether I like it or not, for some bizarre reason, was scratch tickets state, 60, 70%, depending on the year, close on 70%, depending on the year, is scratch ticket driven. So it's between 60 and 70%. And even in a poor economy, and even in a pandemic, people are still scratching. It's a uniquely Massachusetts cultural issue. I can't explain this one. Other states are driven by the numbers game more than anything else.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, because, you know, a scratch ticket, if you win, that's instant gratification. You don't have to wait.
Yeah, and we got like 50 versions of the games.
That, yeah. So, of course, the that's the one with the worst odds of winning.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, your best odds of winning is actually the $5 ticket.
That's right.
Oddly enough. Now, like I'm telling you guys to buy, I'm not promoting this.
You're not endorsing.
Not endorsing. But I mean, it's an easy Christmas gift. I suspect this year, I mean, it'd be gift cards and things in Christmas cards to send to your loved ones.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. It's good to do. So, you know, it's really complicated. I think people understand all these moving parts of government is dependent on multiple sources. And I told Ways and Means one of my concerns going into next spring is how many people give up the professional licenses or suspend the professional licenses because of the economy. So, yeah, in normal recessionary periods, we're a capitalist country. It's Darwinism, right? Survive with the fittest. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So either your business survives because you change or your business is no longer relevant in the future of the economy.
And I see.
That's how it is, right? So everyone has to retool, change, or die. I mean, that's capitalism. So a lot of people retool. No surprise, they go to school, they get associates, they get masters, they get, you know, other graduate degrees, or they finish their four-year program. And believe it or not, people get a lot of licenses during their recessionary period. So real estate licenses, massage licenses, physical therapy, and so forth.
Hmm.
But this isn't a typical recession. So a lot of people are going to be looking at trying to figure out what they're going to do. And a lot of professions involves touching people have a problem.
Yeah.
It's volume driven. The PPE has driven up their cost of business where they're trying not to raise prices on people. And they're not making the same volume.
Right.
So like, we heard about daycare services having problems at 50% capacity. Haircutters and massage therapists are looking at 30% capacity loss in normal business because they have to meet the healthcare requirements. And obviously, they got to keep themselves safe. I don't see a lot of people taking out new licenses in those businesses.
Yeah, I can understand. If you've got a small barbershop with only three chairs and you can only have one person in at a time, that's a big hit.
Yeah, and maybe you're not going to keep your license. So why are you paying for something you can't use?
Right.
So you can try to do a leave, essentially leave of absence, suspend your own license while you reactivate it later and pay the fees. And, you know, I said earlier in the pandemic, the state wasn't collecting fees at all levels.
Yep.
So that's a revenue delay, which is going to impact state services.
Mm-hmm.
So
talk a little bit about the eviction moratorium, Jackie. The state one expired back on Saturday. And I think it's a federal one that's in effect through the end of the year.
Yep.
The governor's trying to put some money toward that. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the governor's trying to put some money towards some housing assistance. It's another Band-Aid measure. The only way we're out of this is for the economy to get going again and people able to get back to work. As we talked about just a minute ago, I mean, some people are not going to operate 100% capacity.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that landlords at both the commercial and residential level are able to work out agreements with their own tenants. Because the reality is this. If you lose a tenant, who's going to replace it in this situation?
Right.
People are not clamoring to go into retail space right now because of what we're doing here. People are working from home and discover office spaces is important. And you look at downtown, you know, besides the, you know, also I hear from people downtown about the absence spaces in already existing buildings, but even in new buildings are not have people in the retail spaces yet.
Mm-hmm.
Landlords, I know the small landlords are going to hurt the worst, obviously, because they have to pay bills now and all that costs, property taxes, utilities, landscaping, maintenance, and so forth. But again, I mean, if people are not able to pay their rent. Who's going to replace them? A lot of people are in the same position together. So this is kind of a catch-22. I said this before, I don't have an easy answer for folks. I mean, you have to be conscientious of both sides, because if the bank forecloses on the property, and banks generally don't like to foreclose, you're homeless anyway.
That's true, yeah.
So you don't have tenants, you can't pay the mortgage.
It's a lose-lose situation.
The landlord loses and the tenant loses. Yeah. So I do think it's very important that somehow people need to work out agreements among themselves, particularly the small ones, because it's more personal to try to figure out how to make this work. And, you know, I have friends looking for commercial property in Boston, and they're sort of shocked the commercial property are still looking for market rate as if there was no pandemic. Mm. And then I've heard from restaurants and retail that some landlords are being very reasonable, but some, actually most of them, are not. So for example, you're a restaurant, a business closed for the pandemic. They want you to pay all your back rent before they open the doors.
Wow.
You've been making no money.
Right.
Exactly. You can't pay your back rent if you have no money.
Right.
There's this kind of disconnect here with landlords and even small businesses regarding how this works. I mean, I just cannot get over the lack of common sense.
Yeah, you need really to allow them to start generating some income in order to pay you.
Yeah, that's why I can't fathom what the problem is here with some of these commercial landlords. The same thing with tenants, right? I mean, even if there's a housing shortage, but you also now have a workforce that can't afford anything. They're either getting paid more to unemployment, but still less than normally what they get paid for, and able to get paid in their business. You know, or they're unemployed because their job doesn't exist for the moment. So, you know, hotel workers, restaurant workers, everyone tied to hospitality industry, education. Mm-hmm. I mean, layoffs in education, layoffs in healthcare. That's also part of it as well. Mm-hmm. And certain industries are paying, but it's just minimum wage. Like, you know, supermarkets are looking for workers, warehouses are looking for workers, but people are not getting paid the capacity or to pay the rent they are paying now, because it won't be the same salary.
Yeah, I think it'll drive rents down eventually.
I think there's a question on that regarding the mortgages and certain landlords, right? I mean, we're a debt-driven economy, whether we like it or not. That's the way it's driven, because of the high interest rates. Mm-hmm. The low interest rates. The low interest rates drives up prices on everything else.
Right. Interest rates go down, prices go up, and vice versa, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when interest rates go up, prices go down.
Right.
So because of that, you got a lot of heavy debted people, and I don't have to tell anybody in the audience who you are. I suspect you know who these folks are heavily debted. So there's a point where you cannot pay a rent that's lower than your debt.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem is.
You're seeing a lot of short sales in the future if that happens, you know.
That's correct. And some banks require minimum rent. So I've talked to some friends looking at commercial property, and some bankers require that, you know, the business maintains a minimum rent requirement for their tenants. Hmm. So they're guaranteed to get paid their mortgage.
Just have to find somebody that can pay that. That's the big question.
Or the economy needs to recover faster, which again is dependent on all of us to do our part to not spread COVID-19.
Yes. Yeah, and Lockham is back to that $3 paper face mask.
Yeah, I know, $3. Whoever thought we'd talk about $3 face mask, you know, and, paying through the nose for hand sanitizer on a label we don't recognize.
Right.
I mean, you go to the supermarket, there's plenty of alcohol, aloe hand sanitizer, but there's no brand name. You don't know where it came from.
No, it's a lot of it I read came from Mexico where it didn't before. There's a new market now from Mexico.
Well, globalization, right? Mm. It's not just about us.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, the census.
Yeah, I'm hating the census people now. So, for my fifth time of giving you wrong information on the census, the dates of the census regarding due dates.
Yes.
For a quick recap, the census should have ended in August, but because of the pandemic, they pushed it out to October 31st. Then they decided to move the date into early September, which they moved the date to October, Then there was a lawsuit against the census to keep it to the 31st, which the judge said yes, but they appealed it. So now they moved it out to early October, which I think was October like 6th.
Yes.
Then, as we talked about it last time about October 6th, they changed the date to October 15th. So the census is now over.
Thank goodness.
Yes, it's challenging. The enumerated census is approximately 99-something percent households counted. Enumerated means that self-reporting plus people getting phone calls and knocks on doors. Obviously, I have a concern that isn't, not a local concern, but I mean, places like Louisiana, Missouri, Mississippi, the Gulf Coast, basically, got smacked with hurricanes, like tropical storms, like nonstop this.
Oh, yeah, I think five summer. Of them in succession or something, yeah.
Yeah, that severely inhibits census counts because infrastructure's down, and you got people that can't reach your doors. So, I do have a serious concern about the Gulf Coast, even though it's not a Massachusetts issue. Obviously you want accurate counting around the country.
Yeah.
An interesting point is I noticed that in self-reporting, there was a slight tick up because I think all the advertising about the end of the census has created some urgency and new awareness. So, the national average tipped up from the 14th to now, for example, the 14th, it was 66.8% on national average, and it went up to 67% by the 15th. So in a day's time, it ticked up to eighth of a percent. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts leveled out at 69.3% ahead of the national average. Quincy's at 69.5, which actually interesting. In a short time, it went from 69.4 to 69.5. I know it's a tenth of a point, but think about it, that's a lot of people. In the city, we're trying to get over 100,000. Weymouth's at 74.9, Braintree is 79.5, Randolph is 71.6, Milton 82.9, and Holbrook is 75.9. So, our neighbors and I, neighbors and all of us have done a remarkably good job busting through the 2010 self-reporting. And I'm hopeful that this act reporting will create the city of Quincy to be 100,000 plus people, which changes our federal HUD money on block grants and other programs. Mm-hmm. So we'll get more funding on the federal level. And we are able to create good precincts because this affects me. The city draws the precincts, by the way. Don't blame me for your precinct lines. Okay, I've had this happen last time. My precinct lines on my district are dependent on how the city draws the lines.
Okay.
And the city will draw each precinct as close to even number as possible within 5% margin of error on either side, 2.5 on either side.
Yeah.
And I will get to do the same thing at my level. Since I'm against the water, I don't have a lot of places to go. So my district is unlikely to have huge structural changes other than the city precinct line is changing. So if I was your rep and in 2 years I'm not your rep because the city moved the line one street, well, that wasn't me. I'm trying to meet my own population requirements within the margin error. The goal is to keep 9 congressional seats. We want to keep our 9 Congress people in place. We don't want to lose one. We've lost one every census, the last 2 censuses.
Mm.
So that's very important to us. And obviously, I've been talking this for a few years now. I need a good count of our entire population, including people of color, immigrants and so forth. So, the rough estimate is the city's all 30 plus percent non-white, probably somewhere in the 25% non-native English speakers. The U.S. Census count will bring us some more accuracy on those estimates. I'm predicting 40% of the city is some person of color.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds unreasonable at all, Jackie.
Yeah, not just Asians.
Right.
Because
right.
Not just Chinese, Indian, and Vietnamese, but you have other nationalities. And same with immigrants. Not all our immigrants are from Asia. We have people from the Middle East, people from Eastern Europe, people from South America, people from the Caribbean. So the census numbers will show that an increase. It won't be as big as the various Asian ethnic groups, but I mean, look at that from 10 years ago, you're going to see that is significant.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. As a matter of fact, I was reading in the Quincy Historical Society's Book of Days just today, actually, that back in 1986, on this date, then Mayor Frank McCauley held kind of a welcoming reception for immigrants from South Asia in the city, 1986. So that's 34 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember back then the census count was incorrect in 1990. So Betty Yao worked some community folks and a few city folks to get a more accurate count. It was unaccounted by almost 40% of people from Asia. So I'm hoping that, you know, I did a massive mailer in April, the volume of commercials, YouTube commercials, mailers to your home. They sent three different mailers at the beginning of the pandemic. Availability of 12 languages, you know, the advantages of the internet will help increase and create accurate counts. Mm-hmm. Also remind folks, the census is doing a COVID census. You'll be getting either text messages or a letter in the mail asking you to fill out a COVID census. It'd be census.gov. So it'd be a GOV website, not a com or Inc. or org or anything else. It's gov, gov. Looking for you to fill out a COVID impact. So they're not asking for personal information in the sense of medical sensitive information in terms of like specifics. They're not looking for financial money. They do not give anybody money, period. Someone asks for money, do not do it. That's my lesson now. Do not do that. But I mean, it's important because they're looking at the economic and the health and mental health impacts of COVID. Mm-hmm. I have COVID fatigue. I cannot be the only one.
There's actually a term, you know, pandemic fatigue, that the mental health experts are starting to banter around. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not pretending I don't have it. I have COVID fatigue. I'm tired.
Yeah.
So that census is going around, and there'll be important data for the U.S. Census to help us. And interesting enough, for that census, they actually disaggregated. They actually broke down several Asian ethnic groups, which I was very, very surprised by. I think the audience knows that I've been pushing for the state to provide disaggregate data to get people to able to choose their own ethnicity as part of data collection by the state for services, for studies, and things like that. So. More accurate information gives us an idea how to direct services, what our demographics look like. So, you know, we have a lot of non-English native speakers. Well, who are they? You know, are they only Chinese? You know, are they Vietnamese? Are they Ukrainian? Are they, you know, Lebanese? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the census will give us some insight on that, and we can better target services. And, you know, work towards a government that reflects our population. So, you know, our service should serve our population, and we should, like anybody else, you should try to do a good job to represent the people you serve, and that's being culturally and consciously aware of who they are. And every level of government should do that. But, you know, that's just my philosophy.
That's okay. That's why it's your podcast, Jackie.
It's your channel. I'm just a guest. Besides, you control the mute button. The incredible thing about video calls is that you can mute me at your will. I can sit here, my lips are moving, you know, that'd be that.
Oh, I would never do that to you. Besides, you could just do your own. You don't need me.
Hey, this is more fun.
I agree. Yeah, it's the best we can do at this point anyways. Want to let folks know how to get a hold of you?
Tacky Chan, Tacky, T-A-C-K-E-Y .C-H-A-N mahouse.gov. Tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. Again, you've got a policy issue. I am reading them all. If you got a personal issue, I do see those, and our staff are helping you. If it's an urgent issue, leave a voicemail at the office at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Obviously, if we can go to my Facebook, the State Representative Tacky Chan, we put a lot of information up there. Maybe you don't have to give me a call. You can look at my social media. You look at tackychan.org. That is our website for services, state services and whatnot. So maybe city services too. So if you need to find something, find it there. Maybe it saves you time trying to find me using my social media and website. Obviously, I remind people to vote. I try to chat with Nikki at the clerk's office, Nikki Crispo. It's been very popular, very successful. She says that people's response are well, and people, for the most part, are doing a good job filling out their absentee ballot. She did remind me, because we had a constituent call in, that the envelopes have a part of it that says primary use. That is okay, because they use a universal envelope. So if you get your absentee ballot envelope and see this check mark for Democrat, Republican, and other parties, ignore that section. That's only for primaries. The envelope is valid. Remember to print your name, sign your name, you know, in the correct spots. And then seal your envelope tight. I use glue to seal my envelope and mail it back. If you're concerned about the mail service. You can take it to the Dropbox at City Hall. Nikki mm-hmm. tells me they had to empty it twice a day throughout yep. this whole situation. So that's how much ballots are coming in.
Yes. Yeah. And if you put it in a Quincy post office, Quincy mailbox, you know, mailbox within the city, the post office will pull that out and bring it right to City Hall, so it doesn't have to go into Boston. So it saves time.
Saves time. And, you know, people are working hard to make sure your ballots are gotten there and to see if they got in there. This is a regular election, so you have to get your in postmarked by day of election.
Right.
And then receive it and it's still be counted. This is the same process we do for overseas ballots and military ballots. So people should not think this is an odd process. It is the same process we use for military ballots and overseas ballots. If you have a question, obviously, well, people called my office already. So you can call us. You also go to the clerk's office because that's who we call at the end also.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we're 26 million people have voted by ballot already, mail-in or early voting. Around the country. It's probably going to be the highest turnout we've ever seen. So please vote. Please vote. There's a whole bunch of ballot questions. That's not true. There's only two ballot questions this time. And there's a whole ticket of people up and down the races from state, county, and the federal level. So you know, you're at home. You can take time looking at the ballot. You have the internet. There's places you can learn about people before you vote.
Yeah, absolutely. And I encourage folks to tune in election night here at QATV. We'll be having our coverage like for the primary, and hopefully, Tacky, you'll be part of that.
Oh, yeah, I'll stop in. I'll probably get all like 4 seconds. You have actual candidates on the ballot. I thank you to the voters now because I am unopposed this year. So thank you for taking a ballot. I would appreciate a vote regardless because I don't have an opponent. So I would appreciate that as well. But I do understand, you know, I do understand that people that have opponents get more airtime regarding how to see things work.
But they don't get their own podcast like you do, so.
Well, I hope to get some little bit of insight. The audience knows, I'm not always right. Things do change from week to week as I learn new information. That's kind of the challenge of this business I'm in. So I hope some people appreciate some of my challenges and my colleagues' challenges as reflected our conversation. I do try to pay attention to a lot of things at once. I do that normally when I'm in the office or not.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. And we'll catch up. Actually, this is going to be a twofer this week. So we'll catch up with you at the end of the week.
Well, let's hope the census doesn't change the date again between now and Friday.
If it does, then we're done talking about the census.
We're done.
Thanks a lot, Tacky. By the way, thanks for shaving for me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I comb my hair and shave, but I mean, as we head into a wave two, we'll see how long my hair grows this time.
I'm just happy to have any left after this year. All right, take care.
You too. I'll talk to you later in a week.